Are you ready to embark on an adventure through the world of words? Join us on the Reading Revolution and let's explore the exciting world of literacy together.
Hello, and thank you for joining us on the Reading Revolution. We've got a great guest on this episode for you today. Debbie Nigro is my guest, an author, business, and broadcasting entrepreneur with experience both behind the mic and behind the scenes. This is a great story, and we're so excited to have her here with us today. She is an award-winning broadcaster, having taken home awards for the best nationally syndicated talk show of the year 3 years in a row from the American Women in Radio and Television, now an accomplished author, people connector, and business advisor. Her first book, The Working Mom on the Run Manual, received rave reviews, and a very unique book tour followed, which we're going to be talking about on this episode. Her latest book, How to Talk to Strangers, is available on Amazon in both print, ebook, and Audible formats. So any way that you like to get your books and keep your literacy habits up, we have that for you in spades. Check out her website, Debbie Nigro, D-E-B-B-I-E, Nigro, N-I-G-R-O.com, while you're playing at home. And of course, follow us on our YouTube channel and all of our social media. If you haven't already, please subscribe to our YouTube channel for all of our updates and like us, and even better, share it with your friends. But hey, leave us not be hasty. Let's get to our guest, Debbie Nigro. It is a pleasure to have you here on the Reading Revolution. How are you?
Joshua, thank you. I want you to know I'm very excited about being on your show today because I just launched this book, and I think I should have done the cover better because the book title is actually How to Talk to Strangers, Advice from a Professional Stranger Talker. That's the key line there. And, you know, it's funny, after I wrote it, which took me 5 years, I went online and there were other books, How to Talk to Strangers. And I was like, really? I think I would have checked that out. But the advice from a professional stranger talker, that's my key to the whole story here. And I think I offer a very different perspective and some very sage advice to your listening audience today. So you ask the questions because I'm a talk show host who talks too much.
Yeah, you know, we both have broadcasting backgrounds. That's where I made my bread and butter. And it's so funny when you think about talking to strangers, that's really what broadcasting is all about. Sure, you have the folks that you're familiar with when you're interviewing them or whatever guest that is coming on the airwaves, but a lot of them you barely know anything about.
Right.
But through those conversations, you learn so, so much. So let's delve into, how did you get into broadcasting?
I was a fat kid, Joshua, and I had to look for an angle. That's how I got into broadcasting because, you know, in order to be accepted or popular as a kid, you kind of fit in. And I didn't fit in because I was chubbier than the other kids. They were all skinny and cute. And I was like, I need an angle here. So I'm just going to be funny. So that talking thing started when I was a kid. And I noticed that it worked like a charm and people were, you know, gravitating to me. And I said, this works, this talking thing. So those skills throughout my life led to me utilizing those skills professionally.
And it's interesting when you say, you know, the art of the conversation, because some people really, really struggle with that, where they can enter a room and others have absolutely no problem with whomever they have to make those connections with. Is that really the crux of the book about, hey, here's some tips and help on how you can really, you know, open up yourself, but also learn how to listen to someone else that's talking to you?
Yes. And it really is a continental divide between who's good at this and it comes naturally and to whom it does not. And you would never suspect to whom it does not, right? And we were talking a little bit before about being a broadcaster and talking to strangers all the time. So in that capacity, I always do a lot of homework. You know, I'm the best at doing homework. So I come prepared for every conversation and I always have enough in my head to draw from to mention, to bring out conversation. When you meet strangers, you don't have that backstory, right? So what I'm trying to say to people is, look, there are a million fascinating people in this world. You wouldn't know it these days because most of us are behind our screens and I think we've lost our way in communicating in person with people and just don't do it enough anymore. Some people are even losing the ability to do those simple conversations. And some people, because of the pandemic, and I point this out in my book, decided they don't even like people anymore, Joshua. They don't even like them anymore. But we have lost something. The technology that has helped us go forward in the world has also stunted us, I think, as humans in our ability to connect with one another. And it's made it really easy to never talk to anybody in person if you can figure out how not to, you know? And I mean, look at the phone call. When's the last time you knew somebody's phone number, called them up, and they picked up the phone?
But I have a hard time remembering my bride's phone number. So that,
okay.
because you're so used to just hitting the button of the contact on your phone. That's the gosh honest truth. Now at Prest, of course I can remember her number, but it's even little things like that, that connection of number, bride, there's the conversation.
How about somebody picking up the phone on the other side if they don't know your number? You don't pick up a phone number you don't know.
Of course
we don't
not.
Know anybody's phone number. So here we go. You know, what I'm trying to do is spark more people to be open to communicating with people they have never met before for a couple of reasons. One, you never know who the other person could be that could enhance your life in some way. Two, you never know how you could help that other person in some way. Three, socializing is the key to good health and wellness. And we have a real problem. And it's been pointed out scientifically, and the Surgeon General even said we have an epidemic of loneliness in America right now. And the isolation thing is, it just keeps getting worse. So people need to break out of that. The young generation, I don't think, has as good a skill set as some of the older generations for knowing how to make conversations, because they grew up completely in a virtual world without any need to. And so I'm sparking not only the thinking about when you run into somebody in a chance encounter, how to make that come into a conversation. I've got some tips, some ideas. I mean, you don't want to talk to every stranger. I'm a mom and a grandma. I don't want people talking to every stranger, for sure. But use your common sense. And it's because you just never know how that conversation is going to change your life. It could create a new friendship. It could create a new business relationship. It could create new romance. And people need to learn to take the shots better, but in a way that's kind of confident and healthy.
Let's talk a little bit about, the fact that this took you 5 years. Lead me through the process of writing the book. We know what it's about, and we know the passion that you're bringing behind it. But, over that time period, what was that like for you to actually sit down and start typing on a computer, pen to paper? Lead us through that journey.
Yes, because I think every author has a book. Every person has a book in them. It's who pulls the trigger and gets it done. Okay. And I think it always starts with an idea. Like you're driving, you're in the shower, you're in a car, you leave yourself a note, then there's another note before you know, okay, something's coming of this idea. And I had a couple of book ideas. And I had this wonderful book coach named Donna Kozik out in San Diego. And I read about her, and I've had her on my radio show a bunch of times. And I'm like, I'm doing a book, and this is going on for years. And meanwhile, I keep featuring her and I keep lying to her, and I'm not getting anything done, right? So I did have a couple of different topics. I wasn't planning on going with this one, but things just sort of rise, right? So the things that you keep thinking about, or the topic that keeps getting louder, is what a writer starts to pay attention to. And it literally, Joshua, was in, sticky notes, a couple of lines on my computer. I wrote some stuff down on a line pad. I'm big with leaving myself. I think I sent myself a lot of notes by email. I sent myself a lot of emails. And at some point I'm like, you know what? This could make sense. But then I didn't like it. I was like, this is stupid. I'm an idiot. What do I know? Just because I've talked to a million strangers, I'm gonna encourage people to talk to strangers. So you start to doubt yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that idea is gonna chuck it. Then you go, I read something in the news or something that sparks me. I'm like, I think I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna finish that book. Then I'm like, okay, I got it going. Then I'm like, oh, the pandemic. Nobody's talking to anybody. Stupid idea for a book. Not its time. Then I started reading about the loneliness epidemic and about people's, how social interaction and social connections are the key to your immune system, your health, your brain, your lack of depression. I was like, I got something to say. So that's when I started really getting into it. And, it's never good enough. I think when somebody's writing something, if an author doesn't question themselves, that, they're not being real. And with a little guidance from Donna Kozik, this great book coach, and everybody has their guides or somebody they like listening to, I was like starting to see how it could frame out. I put the topics down, a little chapter head, like not chapters, but headings. And then it all started fitting in. A lot of changing it, rewriting it. I thought the book was longer than it was, to be honest with you. Did you notice that It's little.
Well, yes.
Okay. So I didn't know it was going to be little till I saw it in print, because I'm like, oh, I wrote all this, like, I felt like it was just right. And how I found out it was little was when my college roommate, Tina Arority, hey, T, who was the first quote in my book about being a college roommate to professional stranger talker. She got it in the mail. She goes, she goes, it's so little. I'm like, what do you mean it's little? Show me the book. Well, how little? In ebook form, it looked longer.
Mm-hmm.
In soft cover form, it looked readable. And I want to say that at first I was a little annoyed that I was like, couldn't I have written like a 100-page book? But everybody I talked to who's read it said, oh, it was great. I read it in an hour.
Mm-hmm.
There's something to that. There's just too much information in the world. I don't know about you. I read everything. I start books. I never finish them. I got 10,000 things I want to finish. But people read my book and finished it in an hour. And I said, well, that, I've done my job, right? So I'm talking too much. I apologize. But the final point about this, as a trend, and this is from Donna Kozik, the book coach, short books are the thing. And why a short book for someone like me is really good is because, as she says, it becomes your big business card.
You know, and there's a couple of things that that have just popped up in what I wanted to talk about here. Some new ideas that we're going to obviously let this conversation lead us. Number one, I think it's interesting when we look at literacy and how we start learning as children, what are we reading? We're reading picture books,
right,
that don't have tons of words, and it allows for that imagination and allows a person to digest the material. And that
right.
Sounds like with a concept right. Like this, perhaps it's the same, even though it's adults and adult-oriented material. Maybe it is simpler instead of having, you know, not everybody needs to write and read The Fountainhead. You know,
right.
Sometimes it needs to be a little bit more condensed like this. I was not taken aback by the size of the book when I received it.
Okay, cool. Because I did find that. I was like, ooh. But it's also light and nice and easy to mail to somebody.
But it's also light and easy to read. And I like to bring it back to that easily digestible, the same way that we all probably started reading.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
Sure. And the other thing that I was thinking about was, when we talk about books that we really, really like, what do we naturally do? We want to talk to somebody about it.
Right.
And I think that so often it's a jump off point for people who have book clubs where that's all they do. Now they get together for that social aspect of it, but they're all talking about the book. So literacy also kind of meeting that need of, you know, removing the isolation and having that human contact. I think that's also a fascinating look at it.
Yeah, I just happened to catch the movie Book Club on, like, I don't know, one of the streaming channels. And it was for women who had started with their book club as the, you know, as the reason to get together that helped them get through the pandemic. And I'm sure many people listening had people, if they love books, that they were able to do book clubs during the pandemic and have a reason to connect, you know?
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about broadcasting, where we're using our words. That's what we're doing right now. How important did writing and reading play a role in your development as a broadcaster?
I think a lot. It's funny because I always loved to read, and my daughter, who is really smart, hated reading. Like, it was a real problem. Like, she hated it. And I just think that that wasn't the way she was able to digest information. She listens to books on tapes constantly now, and she loves it, right? So everybody receives information in different ways and likes to receive information in different ways that's more comfortable for them. So for me, I'd read a lot. I was a great student, you know, I was a goody two shoes, and I was straight A's, and, you know, look at me. And it's funny, as writing went, I used to do a lot of writing as a kid. My mother would say to me, you know, you're a better writer than anything. And I'd be like, blow her off. Like, nah, I want to be a broadcaster. And I didn't get it. And it's why one of the first dedication in the book is to my mother in heaven. Hey, Ma, you were right. Probably laughing and smiling that here we go. We got a book out now. It is my second book, but in a long time, you know, long time.
Was there a reason for that period of time that went through before you said, hey, I'm going to get back to trying to, you know, do a little bit of publishing here?
Yeah, like 8 million reasons. well, I lost my company. That was attached to the last book. and it was not pretty. And I was a female entrepreneur with who chose the wrong people to trust, if you will. And I got left holding the bag for a very big company, a big amount of money. I lost my confidence. You know, I was like, I must be an idiot. And then that led to, you know, trying to do something else to get my brains back, which was representing other people. I was better at representing other people than I thought myself, and using my brain and my creativity. I mean, I was involved in all kinds of crazy, interesting deals. And then I kept trying to get back to me, but it wasn't the me that I knew. And so if I wasn't that girl who was, you know, on 500 radio stations, killing it at home shopping, doing, like, who was I, right? So I think, oh, then I went through, oh yeah, let's remember the ovarian cancer. That took a while, stay alive. And then the death, you know, a lot of death. And I was the oldest daughter in an Italian family. So I had buried a younger brother, and then another, then a mother, then another younger brother. And it just went on, you know, a single mom. And then I got breast cancer. Like, really? Like, there's just life gets in the way. And then you find a moment where all of a sudden you go, you know, I can get back to being me, whatever that means, right? It's a new version of me, but I feel really good about this book and about the timing of getting back to stepping out again. And again, I just told you, this is my first video podcast because I don't know, I had, but along the way I was bald, I had my teeth, you know, I had teeth problems from the chemo, and you know, I was fat. I don't know, you just don't feel good until you feel good enough. And right now I'm not my best, but I'm good enough.
Well, it's terrific. We're very honored that you would to choose to do this with us. And again, you know,
it's a good experience for me.
Well, which is, you know what, honestly, that makes us feel even better. Yeah,
and
you mentioned.
I keep looking at myself. I'm like, but who cares?
Yeah, doing fine. You mentioned something else that was interesting, and I guess without prying too much into it, but you did write a book about, you know, the working mom on the run.
Yes.
When your daughter was young, you mentioned that she really wasn't into reading books. Did you read a lot to her when she was younger?
Probably not. I think I was moving too fast as a single mom, trying to conquer the world and be a great mother at the same time. So being a great mother was of paramount importance to me, but I was exhausted from trying to be everything to everybody. And I'm probably would pass out. I mean, she'd sleep in bed with me, we'd watch this, but I think maybe I could have read to her more, or maybe she wasn't paying attention or didn't love it. I mean, I'm creative and I did everything possible to give her a great childhood and life, but apparently I dropped the ball on that.
Well, maybe not. I mean, the reason that I found that I pulled that correlation out was the fact that she loves to listen to books. You know, there's still, you know, involvement with literacy there. And, it, you know, not that she has a book in front of her, but she's still engaged with listening to it.
Oh, yeah.
Perhaps that was a gift in and of itself.
Well, maybe because of my nature of what I do for a living. You know, she was always around the radio industry and, you know, other media. And maybe she just picked up the vibe that way.
100%.
You're going to send me into therapy now because I got to go now. Was I a good mother? Did I read enough? You know, thanks a lot, Josh.
Oh, sorry. That was not the intention of that. Now I feel terrible. Great.
Good.
Well, we'll get out of that dark spot. You know, you had the CEO of Global Vending Group and, you know, the creator of Inchy the Bookworm Book Vending Machines, Jay Blumberg, our leader here. You had him on your podcast.
Right.
And I'm wondering, how did you find out about Inchy the Bookworm?
Okay, so this is a good story. I went to vote, and it was election, I forget what election, not too long ago, whatever the last election was, I went to vote at a local grammar school down the block. And I look up and there's an Inchy machine, a vending machine. I go, what is this? And I'm naturally curious. So I walked over and I was like, holy cow, I love this thing. And I started talking to one of the teachers who were there. I go, explain this. So she explained how it works and that kids get rewarded for doing well or good during the course of a year. And every kid gets a token, an Inchy token, and gets to put it one and take a book home that they get to keep. I was like, this is the greatest idea I've ever seen. So I looked them up because I'm a research nut. And that's how I get to people. Something sparks me that I know is different because I heard it all, been there, done that. I've interviewed thousands of the smartest people on the planet. And when something is unique, it resonates and it's very loud in my head. So I connected, invited him, and happy now to say We're friends, me and Jay Bloomberg. Love him.
And what a wonderful, that's why we're all here. He's making this all possible for us.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's such an innovative way, if we can pat ourselves on the back, to bring literacy to kids. And I want to run back to something that we didn't talk about was the promotion of your first book and a very innovative and unique way that you promoted that.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about this book tour? I've never heard of anything like this before.
Aha! You're going to hear about another crazy one I'm coming up with now. Look, to stand out with a book is the hardest part, I think, of the whole process. Like, okay, so you killed yourself, you wrote the thing, then you forget how hard it was, and now you have a book. Now what do you do with it? There's a million people with books out there. Go to the library, stop at a bookstore. I mean, it's incredible how many books are in the world, right? So how do you get your book into the hands of a lot of people or make it known or, you know, get a lot of promotion from it? So I always think out of the box. And I said to myself at the time, the heck am I going to do this book tour? You know, I know authors do book tours. And at that time I was on really 500 different radio stations. So I thought, oh, well, that just use that to promote it. But where am I going to do this? And I thought about a bookstore, but my demographic at the time, working moms, I said, you know what? They're not in bookstores. These people are getting gas and cigarettes and they're getting lunch and paint, whatever they were getting at the time. And they're driving through 7-Eleven. So I went to 7-Eleven. I said, listen, I got an idea. I'm always like a little scared when I get a corporate executive and they get me. And I'm like, listen, can't you see this? We can do that at all. We can have a book tour at 7-Elevens and people will come and they'll get the book. And then, because you're trying to promote, and they were at the time, they were trying to attract moms because they were offering for the first time or an enhanced version of healthy food. And they wanted busy moms to come and be able to pick up healthy food for themselves, for their kids. And I was like, this is great. They'll come. I got them. And sure enough, it was a 29 city book tour, Josh, in 30 days at 7-Elevens. And 7-Eleven bought the books from me, enough for every store. And they gave away free coffee and donuts from 7 to 9 a.m. And I was there signing books, whether it was St. Louis or Dallas or Boston. And the Working Mom on the Run was there. And what was so great about it was the energy of the whole thing. There are people lined up outside of every 7-Eleven and thanking me. Like grandfathers were going, oh, I got this for my granddaughter. She's a working mom. And, you know, a girlfriend would pick one up, a mom would stop. And the news just went wild with it. So it was front page news in every lifestyle section. I was on TV. I was in newspapers. I was like, hello, it's the working mom. And it was so successful for 7-Eleven that they used it at 7-Eleven University as a teaching tool to how to do a great book promotion.
So again, the learning keeps on going. And I'm just sitting here thinking about this. You're writing a book about the working mom on the run and 29 stores in this tour. You're really living that working mom on the run. That's
yes.
A lot of stores to be hitting in a short amount of time.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny, I kind of got excited about the fact that I was hopping on and off of planes. You know, I don't travel that much, and I didn't before then. And of course, I had a kid. I took her with me to some of them. But, you know, my mother was alive at the time, and she had a babysitting. You know, working mom is never never relaxed about being a mom or working, because wherever she is, she feels guilty that she's not. Meaning that if she's with her kids, she feels guilty she's not working. And if she's working, she feels guilty she's not with the kids. So it was a very difficult time for working moms, because there was a real contingent of stay-at-home moms who really dissed the working moms back then. Like, you know, we were like, what are we thinking about? Horrible people. And it was an interesting time in the world to be speaking about a topic that I noticed nobody was talking about. That's how I started the show. I said, it was exhausting. I'm running crazy. I said, is nobody talking about this? And I was the pioneer in talking about the working mom lifestyle. And I actually owned workingmom.com when the internet had just started. And I didn't even know what the internet was, to be honest with you. I had a million hits the first month. I didn't even know what the internet was.
And now it's something that we can't live without.
Yes, or we could. And I guess my book brings it back to the new book, which is How to Talk to Strangers, Advice from a Professional Stranger Talker, because I have talked to so many people. I think we need to start living without some of our virtual accoutrements to get back to being more human to one another. I think we better do it sooner than later. You know, artificial intelligence is on everybody's tongue these days, and that's great. And we need it for so many great advances, maybe in medicine and technology and how it speeds up everything that is good. But where it might hurt us if we aren't careful is in how we deal with each other. And humans will always need other humans. So let's figure out how to do it better.
And it does pose a lot of issues in the educational world too. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, what's going on in education as far as literacy goes, and AI, you know, rearing its head and its abilities to not only create words and put them together for coherent thoughts, it takes away a little bit more of that interaction with someone else where they might actually have to get up and go and do research the way that you're talking about, yep. The way that you put your research together. Suddenly it's done for you by a machine. And that is that's a pretty scary thing to think about as we're raising new generations that they're not so inclined to actually have those experiences.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm just trying to do my part. You know, we all try and contribute what we can to this planet. And, you know, I'm not going to be out there in a medical profession solving some genetic problem. I'm sorry about that, but I don't have those skills. I do thank everybody in the medical profession. But this is what I think I can lend value to, you know, having people have a more fun life filled with more people that are genuine, that are different from what they're used to, opening up their minds and their social circles and not being afraid to do it.
I like the connection between broadcasting and writing, the two books that you have. And I want to ask you about the nuances and the differences between the two when you were putting them together respectively at their different times, but also the same idea in mind that every guest that you have on your radio show, everybody that you talk to is different in their right, in their ways. Was it the same when you were putting the two books together? Obviously different subjects, but you know, still kind of the same idea of writing down these thoughts. How did all that work, if that makes sense?
You mean the first book and this book?
Yes.
I hated the first book now that I look back on it. It was like vapid. You know, I really thought I didn't do a good job. But I was also younger and I didn't have as much wisdom. So, you know, wisdom is a great thing. And the collaboration of wisdom and youth, when the two come together, is really a beautiful thing on this planet. More people should respect that, you know, the young generation and the older generation have different perspectives, and but together it's power, you know. And I'm just going to turn my light around because I didn't know I got it off. Oh, the whole time my light was facing backwards. Josh, why didn't you tell me?
Because you look fine the way you were.
Oh, hello. I got one of those ring lights. I almost forgot to put it on.
Sure. Your image was terrific. It's fine this way, and it was fine the other way as well.
Okay. So yeah, I thought I could have done better when I'm reading back to it, but it was fun for then. And it was, you know, it was my perspective then. This, I'm a little harder on myself these days and make sure I'm not wasting somebody's time. And I try and use less words and get more punch out of what I'm writing. How's that sound?
It sounds perfect. Yeah. Now, you kind of alluded to something. We talked about the 7-Eleven book tour and how you're going to promote this book. If you don't mind, without telling too many tales out of school, what do you have up your sleeve for this one?
Oh, Josh, I got something up my sleeve. And it's a bigger sleeve because I'm chubbier than I was at the last book. I'm not sure. I am deciding, but it can't be something not as exciting as the last one. How's that sound? Obviously, social media has changed and the way people promote anything. I'm like being on your podcast, of course. But I want to do something out in the real world where I can actually physically show people how to connect in real time. And so it's got to be fun. I have a couple ideas. I'm talking to a couple of people. It'll obviously be something that would help me back, you know, like if I were, like, let's put it this way. 7-Eleven. Who doesn't know what a 7-Eleven is, right? So when I did that book tour at 7-Elevens, they had an in-house PR team. I had PR people. You know, the collaboration, getting the word out was very powerful. So I would like to figure out, and I'm doing that now, who is my next target for, could be Target, a maybe a corporate partner who would love to attract people who want to connect, or whose corporate mission is about connections and people being, you know, connecting with one another. I'll get there and I'll get back to you.
Well, we'll be waiting. We'll certainly be waiting to hear, because the word I've used a couple of times here is innovation. It always seems like we have to be doing something new. And I believe, that keeps us all fresh when we approach something in a different way. And in your case, how do I promote this in a way that maybe I haven't tried? Maybe it's a little difficult. Maybe it's a little uncomfortable. But the rewards are there if the right idea falls into place.
You know, it's funny though, because often you think because something worked back when, it's going to work again.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not, There was one thing I wanted to share with you that got my attention. And it was the summer. I was taking a walk in a park. And I came upon this thing that I was like, what does this say? And it was called the Happy to Chat Bench. And it said, sit down if you're open to having a conversation with somebody. I stood there. I was like, what am I looking at? So I did some homework on it. And it was a concept started in London by a woman who was out walking her dog, or just out walking. She spotted an older man sitting by himself, looking lonely on a bench. So she wrote down on little index cards, this happy to chat bench. If you're lonely, sit here and have a conversation. And it just took off as an idea. And there are a lot of cities around the country here in the US who have these happy to chat benches. And the town in which I spotted it was called Mamaroneck, New York. So somehow in posting the story about it, the mayor weighed in at the time and said, I'm responsible for that. And I said, oh, good, because when my book comes out, I'm going to call you. I want to do a book sign. I want to do something at your happy to chat bench. And it was all set, Josh. He didn't get reelected.
Oh, no.
So we got to figure out who the next person is over there. That's it. But, that's life. You get ideas.
It is. I won't get into my PR nightmares that have happened, but, that's for another time. We can talk about that offline. But, but again, it's roll with the punches and how do you move forward from there? And I think that there's a testament about that too with people who struggle with reading, especially kids at a young age, giving them that encouragement to kind of continue to not give up. They might be struggling for a myriad of reasons, but instilling in them the importance of literacy at such a young age is it's key for all of us adults.
Yeah. I was actually just reading about, the best thing you could do for your child is to teach, is to read, for a happy child, for a child whose life is going to just reading. And then I read another story about how audiobooks are also incredibly wonderful for children. It helps them in many ways you hadn't imagined, with, lack of less depression, more connection. I mean, it was really loud. There's some stuff coming out now about all this. Oh, by the way, did I tell you I recorded my own book?
I was going to ask you about that. I wanted to talk to you about
would.
That process. Absolutely.
Yeah, I recorded my own book. And it's funny, I never thought anybody, okay, I'll try an audiobook. Why not? I look at Amazon, everybody's got an ebook or a regular soft cover and then audiobooks. I'm like, I can do this. Well, that was hard. And I started sounding like an idiot. I'm like, just sound like yourself, right? Mm-hmm. What are you trying to, but I talk fast. So myself, I had to have a talk with myself about slowing down so that somebody driving in a car would not start driving at 75 miles an hour just because they're listening to me. That's not good. So I got through it, had to go back a few times. The editing, it took longer than I thought. And then when I got a little confused, and you have to upload to Audible's division called ACX, which mm-hmm. is the connected portion when you have a book on Amazon. And you have to have an Amazon book already up there in order for them to accept you to add an audio version. So that's the catch 22. And you have to be a human. Thought that was nice of them. And when I first put it, and I had it done with a professional recording studio, I met a great guy. I'm like, Googling, who does audio books for Audible? Because how do you know, right? Unless you, it's a certain kind of niche. And even that said, when I uploaded the files individually by chapter, they all came back, not acceptable. This volume is off. This treble is off. I'm like, what? I just paid for all this. So I had to go back and have the engineer reset the levels and put it back in. And then it takes a little bit of time for them to approve you. And then when it's like, they send you a letter, you're like, yay. But I also didn't know how to price it. And you and I were talking about this before. I figured, okay, the ebook sweet spot for an ebook is $2.99. Learned that from my book coach. So I'm like, okay. Then the soft cover, because I invested some more money in that, made it $9.99. And then the audiobook, I'm like, you know what? This cost me a lot of time and money. I'll make that $9.99 too. And I see that it comes down and it's like $3.99. I go, $3.99. I'm worth more than $3.99, my knowledge. So I started reading, like, there's no human. You can't, there's a email. You can talk to a human through email, but, you know, like the world we live in today, to have a real conversation. So I wrote my little note and I heard back and it's like, well, but I did read in the fine print that they have the exclusive right to set the price of your audiobook based on the length of the book and whatever. So I'm like, you know what? Whatever. I'm just experimenting with a new world order we have in the world. And I've never done an ebook and I've never done an audio book. And I'm form phobia. I hate reading all these contracts, but I do. So, you know, it's a process. And I think once an author gets through it one time, then they're kind of like, you know what? I could do this again. What I'm terrible at, you're a great talk show host, by the way. You're asking good questions. What I'm terrible at is checking to see how many books I sold today. Like, I don't check. You know, I don't check to see. You have to decide on what kind of royalty you're going to get. Like, I'm not checking. What I'm focused on right now is how to use this book for the best possible use of my time and everybody else's time. Like, how is this going to really be my big business card? And I think I would love it to lead to some speaking engagements where I, you know, could share some good energy with people who maybe have a group or are looking for a speaker or a company, you know, anybody who's got an organization who wants to teach people how to connect better in person with one another. I'm your girl.
Would you do it all over again? If you move forward and say 5 years from now that, hey, I'm going to write another book, would you also plan on doing it yourself? Would it just repeat the process? Was it enjoyable?
Oh, it's exciting to get it done, Josh. It's really a it's an accomplishment. And now that I know, I'm already often thinking about my next book. I think that, you know, when I look at people who write 1,000 books or 500 books or multiple books, I'm like, how do they do this? You get into a flow. Once you figure out your style, and I think my style is the short book with a punchy message that you can read in an hour and listen in less than an hour. I think I can do that like this. I do think I can do that. Now that I got it, as long as I've gotten some good reviews and I was, you know, you're worried, like, what if I get a bad review? But I got 5 or 6 5-star reviews already.
So that's encouraging, right?
Very rewarding, yeah. Not everybody leaves a review. You got to sort of encourage people to.
And some have to be qualified too. I know through Amazon that you know, sometimes they actually say, yes, I actually got the book. It's just not some person who decided to come by and write a review. But that's very positive when you actually get that kind of feedback. And the fact that you do get that feedback, I can't imagine what it was like, you know, 50 years ago where you had no idea what people would have thought about your book, except the book review folks and on TV, newspapers, or what have you there.
You know, it's interesting. Who's getting book deals these days, really big book deals, are only people who have giant media followings and social media followings. It's really bizarre. That wasn't the case years ago. I mean, they took a chance on some people. Nobody's taking a chance with money anymore unless they know the other person's got a built-in audience for that thing. And you would think doing what I do, I'd have a bigger social media following, but I didn't. I don't really, that was never my goal. And who I am connected to are really qualified and highly interesting people. So when somebody's in my orbit, they get a little bit of a bonus by knowing me, because I can't help my business head that says, you know, you should know. And before you know it, there's a business deal that they never saw coming. So that's my kick.
What were some of the things that you weren't expecting with this book this time around? And what kind of advice would you give to someone who is kind of on the fence of saying, do I have the story that you talked about? Everybody's got a story. What would you say to someone who is saying, is my story worth it?
Oh my gosh. I found out, and I didn't, you know, you don't put the title on yourself, but I found out I had imposter syndrome, which is a really big thing that a lot of people who might attempt to write a book might be wrestling with, which is, why should people listen to me? You know, how am I different? And the thing is, it's really a problem until you get over it. And along the way, I did something that my book coach told me that you should never do, which I kept saying, oh, you know, I'm writing a book. Yeah, I'm writing a book. Yeah, I'm writing a book. She calls it's the BS emotional payoff without actually writing the actual book and finishing it. So she said, don't do that. I did that 1,000 times. Keep it to yourself and just do it. And don't think it has to be the Magna Carta or 8 million pages. Where I'm just telling you right now, short books are cool. They're in, especially if you're trying to create some, you know, an authority for yourself. If you're in real estate, or if you're a doctor, or if you're a mom, you know, whatever you are, that is what you know. And we all know something cold that we know. And just stop and sit back. And I used to ask this question to people a lot, which would make them think. I go, so what's your genius? And they would look at me like, what? I go, what's your genius? Like, what is the thing that comes naturally to you that you take for granted? And I think that will be very telling when people ask themselves that question as to what they're great at that they might be able to write about.
That's awesome. What's coming up right now? I know you're about to take a well-earned vacation, and we've talked a little bit about the promotion of the book, but what else do you have on tap? What's coming up in the next couple of months through the rest of 2024?
Finishing my dental implants, because I didn't want to smile on any podcast. I'm 2 months in, one more month, I'm going to get the real cuties. And that was a long process and expensive, by the way. So I think I just started getting some things on LinkedIn. I just put up the book yesterday on LinkedIn for the first time, and I picked my spots. I did it first to like my friends, then on my Facebook page for my show, then my personal Facebook page, and a little on Instagram. So I started getting the ball rolling and getting some feedback. I go, okay, this is good. And then I put it on LinkedIn yesterday. Then I had Donna, my book coach, on my show to talk about the process so I could share it with other people. I said, if I did it, you can do it, right? So that just went up. And I think I'm just going to take this little vacation, rest my brain, and then come out hot. Hot, Joshua. I already got contacted by somebody who has the sixth biggest global podcast on the world. I don't know what that's about. I'm like, really? I'd love you to be a guest. Really? Somebody already contacted me. We're having an event. Maybe you'd like to be a speaker. I'm like, get out. You know, so it's starting to get exciting. And then I have a really unbelievable girlfriend who's in the PR business. You're a PR genius, right? So you know. Who's like been begging me to help me. I'm like, okay, I'll write a press release, I guess, because I can write, you know, and then I'll make her look at it and she'll just do whatever she does. And then I kind of like have a little bit of fear of getting a good reaction. You know what I'm saying? Like, because if people do respond, I'm going to have to really step up and roll. I mean, I might have to be on television, chubby and old, but who cares?
I believe that you've got the energy and the smarts to not have to make that a burden, not a challenge. It'll be something that'll fall right into your lap.
You know, I talked to something in the book, and it's a funny story about how a night I went out in a meat market bar to do an experiment, a romantic experiment. And I did that because I had broken up with somebody and was like for a year miserable, and I wasn't dating anybody, you know, when you're sick to your stomach with the love thing. So I said, that's it. And I went out that night, and I should just yell at myself for what I just said, because I tell everybody else that what I learned that night by flirting with everybody and not caring what anybody thought about me and just getting my own jollies, because I always had a problem talking to men I was attracted to. And it was like a fumper dumper thing, you know, like I could talk to make a business deal, but I'm like, and I would go the other way. I said, no, not tonight. And so the outcome of that experiment, and what I share with everybody, is never lose one night of your life not thinking you're good enough, pretty enough, smart enough. Who are these other people anyway? So I just got to yell at myself for what I said about not wanting to show up on TV, because really, don't I take my own advice? What is my problem?
Where can people hear you on the air, and where can people find you online?
Well, thank you for asking, Joshua. DebbieNigro.com is where like home base is. If you believe it, I'm still trying to figure out how to get the book up there. Need help. I think that's, you know, everybody needs help, and I just need more help. I keep having the light turn around. Don't you think I need some help?
No, you look fine.
A lot of
again,
help,
I'm
Joshua.
Not.
Okay. So the bottom line, DebbieNigro.com. I have a Debbie Nigro Show Facebook page, on Instagram at The Real Debbie Nigro. I'm on LinkedIn as Debbie Nigro, and you can feel free to connect with me. And I do a newsletter every week from DebbieNigro.com that it's free to sign up, and I kind of recap everything. I throw in some fun stuff. And that's my story. I can't give you my phone number because I won't answer, because I won't know yours.
Oh, but everybody can hear you every day at 11 a.m.
Yeah,
East Coast
11 to
time
12
on
noon.
what station?
WGCH. And since we're doing this around the country, it's listen live button on WGCH.com. If you're in the New York, Connecticut area, it's 1490 on the dial. The podcast after on DebbieNigro.com. That's it.
Awesome. Debbie, thank you so much for being on The Reading Revolution. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. And until the next time we talk, please enjoy your vacation. We'll hope you'll come back.
You were wonderful. Thank you.
And that'll wrap up this episode of The Reading Revolution. If you haven't already, please like, share, and subscribe to our YouTube channel and share our podcast on your favorite podcast platforms, whatever that may be. If you'd like to contact us or you have an idea for a guest you'd like to hear on the show, email readingrevolutionpod@gmail.com. My thanks to our technical directors and content creators, David Gagan and Thomas Crane. The Reading Revolution is produced by Jake Blumberg and Connor Russo, and its executive producer is Jay Blumberg. I'm your host, Josh Gregory. We'll see you next time right here on The Reading Revolution.